We'll get Kellis Ramadan on with us here this segment. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner all with you here on the game. 537-1350. I don't know why I just gave you the phone number, but you can use it in a segment that is not this one. You can also tweet us at the game KMAN. Answer the question today. What is it that could happen the rest of this basketball season that would make you feel confident and excited about the future of the men's basketball program? Seems like there's a lot of those around the Big 12 that are at this point in time. And this all came to me after watching TCU last night beat Texas Tech. And I know, ho-hum, right? They beat Texas Tech. But they're now 6-5 in the Big 12. I mean, they're in a position where they basically just have to find a way to win probably three more games, you know, the rest of the way in conference play. And they're going to be in the NCAA tournament in year one under Jamie Dixon. So I think that's a fan base and a program that's feeling energized and pretty confident right now about the way things are moving. And there's a lot of other schools around the Big 12 that fit that bill. And K-State does not seem to be one of them as of right now. Let's talk with Kellis Robinette from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle. Kellis, appreciate the time. You know, do you feel – let me start by saying this. A snapshot in time right here after K-State beats Baylor, loses to Kansas, and before that lost at home to TCU. Do you feel better or worse about this team right now than you did before the TCU game and this last stretch of games?
I'd say better. Not a whole lot better, but better. Because coming in, you'd think, well, they probably beat TCU and then lose those other two close, and it kind of went the other way. They all three were close games, and then they win arguably the toughest of the three at Baylor. So it's a very difficult team to predict. I've ever since they beat West Virginia here at home, I've been wrong trying to predict all their games since then. I can't say I've ever seen a basketball team quite like this. But I guess that's what happens whenever a game is close and it's coming down to those last couple minutes. I'd say there's a little bit of progress has been made. You don't play Kansas that tough at home if you're not at least a capable team. So I feel a little bit better about them. But, yeah, still a lot of uncertainty out there for sure.
Was there anything about that Kansas game that surprised you? I mean, it seemed like – it was basically the story of the season with K-State playing pretty good basketball and then putting themselves in a tough position late with how they handled things down the stretch.
Well, I was surprised the offense wasn't scoring at a higher clip. I mean, they scored 90 at Allen Fieldhouse. And Kansas is this year, I mean, every time you hear Bill Self open his mouth, he's talking about how terrible they are defensively, at least compared to where they usually are. I thought they would get to 80 points in this game without much trouble, and especially when the game started, you had Barry Brown and Wesley London guys getting a bunch of steals and leading to transition buckets and stuff. I thought that would be the way they would try to do things, and then it turns out that Kansas kind of shored that up a little bit and made it to where they weren't turning the ball over, and they made Kansas State work in the half court, and it seems, especially in the second half, that the Wildcats just didn't really know how to attack that best. It looked like at times they were trying to run the pick and roll and nobody could get the ball back to the guy who was running toward the basket. A lot of pick and pop stuff, didn't see much motion. And that's I guess their problem right now is just when they do get stuck in the half court offense, they don't really have a go-to type of play that they like to run. It's always kind of a free-for-all at this point. You don't know what they're going to go to or how they're going to attack the basket. So that's what held them back in that game, in my opinion.
Kellis Robinette talking with us, Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagle. Is there something about the matchup with Kansas that you think has led to Dean Wade having his two best games against them?
Well, I think the motivational factor can't be ignored. I think growing up in St. John and being a Kansas State fan, he's seen Kansas State struggle against Kansas, and he came in here wanting to change that and have a winning record against these guys. So I think that's part of it. But then the other part is I do think there are favorable matchups. I mean, Josh Jackson, as good as he is, he doesn't know how to defend the post. He's not skilled as a defender, and I think Dean Wade had a lot to do with him being in foul trouble. Vic, when they put him on him, I mean, that's just an utter mismatch, 6'5 versus 6'10, especially with Vic crouching down and putting his elbow into Wade's back. I mean, you pretty much have to try to score when you see that. And then Landon Lucas, he doesn't want to commit fouls. Everybody in the league knows he doesn't want to commit fouls because he's their only rebounder, only center that they really trust. So you can go right at him. I think that's just a matchup made for him where he's going in the game motivated, and there are people defending him that he can beat.
There are a couple of guys from that game that that were really struggling with their shots. Xavier Sneed, Barry Brown, both of those guys combining to go 3 of 14 from the floor, and they've really battled consistency throughout the course of the Big 12 season. Do you think that, especially with Barry Brown being a guy who's a starter, you think that with him it's a case of trying too hard, or it's become a more of a mental thing because he's playing well defensively, but it just doesn't seem like he has the same confidence shooting from the outside that he used to?
Yeah, that's been surprising, because before this last three-game stretch of his where he hasn't reached double figures, he was the team's leading scorer, and he lit up Tennessee with a bunch of three-pointers, and he's been, up until just recently, their most reliable guy. In just the sense that he can get steals, he can get out in transition, he's a very improved player around the basket, and he's one of the better three-point shooters. So I'm not really sure what to say is holding him back right now. Maybe it's a confidence issue. I mean, he puts in the work. Nobody's in the gym more than him. So I'm not really sure where that's come from, or if it's just a deal where the offense isn't moving the ball the right way to get him open or as open as he would prefer. And then with Sneed, yeah, I mean, he's shown the capabilities to be a great player. Where he is right now as a freshman, in my mind, he's as good as where Rodney Magruder was as a freshman, and has a lot of good games in front of him, but he's still just battling that consistency issue. And I think that's just probably what you're going to see from him the rest of the year, where certain games he looks like the best player on the floor, and other games he looks like a non-factor.
Talking with Kelis Robinette here on the game. 7 games left in the Big 12 schedule, and really the only one that has any juice to it, and I guess what I mean by that is a win that would really, I think, excite people being against one of the top 3 teams in the league left is West Virginia coming up on Saturday on the road. So for the rest of the year, what do you think K-State could do, or is there something K-State could do, and even if you include the postseason, that would really get the majority of the fan base excited about where the program's headed?
That's the obvious answer there. Like you said, the 7 games left, it'll determine whether they make the in-state tournament or not. It's a soft bubble. Nobody from the mid-majors is making a push for at-large bids this year, so it's really not going to take too much. But, as you said, if they win, three of these next 8, including the Big 12 tournament, or even 4 of these next 8, and kind of sneak in the NCAA tournament, without a win or two in the postseason, that's probably not going to excite the majority of the fan base, like you say. So if they really want to get guys jazzed up and get people fired up about the next couple of years, they're going to just do what good teams do and go on a run. I remember, when Jacob Pullen was a senior, him and Curtis Kelly had been struggling that year. They were kind of in the same spot as this team is right now. They a little bit of a bubble team. You didn't know if they were for sure going to get in the tournament, and then they just all of a sudden picked it up and ended the year winning at Texas, beating Kansas, just crushing people. I think they won their last 6 or 7 games, and then ended up as a 5 seed in the tournament. And, I mean, that fired people up. People wanted to see that team. They got really king at the end of the year. So, they got 7 games left now. If they could do that same thing, that would really excite them, I feel like. But that's probably what it would take.
Yeah, I do think that's a good example. Before we let you go, curious, you did the story on our friend D. Scott Fritchin, who took the collision with Frank Mason in the Kansas game. Could you have taken that sort of an impact the way that he did and keep on ticking?
Oh, man, that's a good question. He got plowed over pretty good. I guess my question would just be the laptop portion of it. Mine is a little flimsy. If you touch it the wrong way, it shuts down. So that's why if you see me in the press conference and stuff, I'm always kind of delicately carrying it. So physically, I think I could have gotten back up, passed the concussion protocol, gotten back in there. Maybe you guys would have said I was pushing myself too far and I shouldn't have gotten back out on the floor. But I don't know if the computer would have survived. So that would have been my bigger question.
Have you had one of those in your journalistic career?
No, honestly, the worst player side court interaction I've ever had was once I was covering a game at Madison Square Garden where we were right at courtside and Will Spradling came plowing into the press row there, and there were some people that had a bunch of open sodas all over the table there, and Will didn't like it when he came over and was completely doused with soda on his arms, so he looked at us and flung the soda off and hit it right in my face. That was kind of embarrassing. But that was as bad as I got it. Had the towel off, but no pain involved.
Well, not it wasn't like some subliminal message there from Will Spradling, was it?
he apologized after the game. Okay. But I mean, I totally understand it. You gotta shoot, you gotta play. You don't want an arm covered with soda. But I was in the wrong place at the wrong time at that moment.
Yeah, much better us be covered in soda. Kellis, appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Kellis Robinette with us here on the show. In hour two, we're going to go around college basketball, 525. Check in on a former Wildcat. Things going south for him. But coming up next, stop me if you've heard this one before. Seriously. Negative press for the Big 12 today.
John, stop.
Okay, you guys have heard that before. That's coming up here on the game.